Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, the credited views of David Alan Rivera, and we're going to be talking about his book, Final Warning, A History of the New World Order. And as I read the book, of course, it seems so apropos today, as you are witnessing the world revolution taking place. Certainly, about 4 months ago, Turkey was shifted from the pro-Western camp into the radical Islamic camp, thanks to American CIA, a gentleman named Mr. Gulen, who was allowed to come to this country and operate his subversive activities. And Mr. Gulen has not only, of course, moved Turkey into the radical Islamic camp as an enemy of America, with the full help, of course, of our CIA, but he's also working across America with setting up Hadras schools. He's working in the Stan countries and Uzbekistan and Kurdistan and Turkmenistan and you name them all. I can't keep track of them, but he's also working to take those into this radical Islamic camp. Certainly the government of Tunisia has fallen. There are riots in Algeria today. Cairo fell. Certainly the people in the surrounding countries are very concerned. The leaders of Jordan, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the Arab Emirates have pleaded with President Obama not to topple Mubarak. But, of course, Barack Obama is simply a front for the power elite who control both political parties and are working to bring about this one world government. I mean, why do you think we don't have any tariffs and we're transferring our wealth and our factories? Over 8 million American jobs to other countries, 42,000 American companies have closed down in the last 10 years, many of them shifted over to communist China. It's all part of the plan for the equitable distribution of wealth among nations. Well, ladies and gentlemen, of course, we can look at the riots in Jordan. The Syrian government is offering to make major concessions. Been riots in Yemen, riots in Somalia, and of course, then we know, of course, that there's great instability in Iraq, and certainly there's always the increasing bombings there. We've established a government under Sharia law so we could drive out the Christians. We've established a government under Sharia law in Afghanistan so we could drive out the Christians. We've destabilized Pakistan that has nuclear weapons, and one day those will be used probably against India and perhaps even against the United States. After all, we provided them with the wherewithal for that. And if you doubt what I'm saying, go to my January 2008 newsletter. It's January 2008, The Sybil Inman Story. Read it and read it and reread it. It's known every place in the world except the United States, where we have freedom of the press. And that freedom gives the people who own the press the right to suppress it with the help, of course, of the Brotherhood of Darkness. And we could go on and on, but we're witnessing the world revolution that David Alan Rivera wrote about many years ago when he first wrote the first edition of Final Warning. David, thanks very much. As you see what's going on today, what do you think?
Well, Dr. Stan, I really don't – what I look for today are trending as far as how countries are aligning, how governments are aligning, how political parties are aligning. I really kind of let go some of the things that are going on to other people, other researchers who have more resources than me to look at these sort of things. Because my strength basically has been just the history of where we've gotten to now.
Well, and I think you did a great job of it. We'll be back in just a moment with David and his book, Final Warning. Well, David, how did you get interested in studying this effort to bring about the New World Order and then to force the secret societies and subversive movement behind this effort to alter the course of world events?
Well, it really happened a very long time ago when I was little, and my mom had started taking me to church back when I was like 10 years old. And we used to go to a church that basically had church every day. And, you know, we would leave for church, and I'd see my friends playing out in the street, and I had to go to church. And so I guess I made a decision at that time that I could go and hate it, or I could go and try to get something out of it. So that's what I did. And, you know, the church taught about, you know, the last days Bible prophecy and the things that were gonna go on with the Antichrist and a world government. And in that little mind of mine, I was trying to put together, you know, obviously they dumb you down in school, so you don't really hear true history that has transpired. And in my little mind, I'm trying to figure out, well, how can all this kind of stuff happen? And back when I was in college, I heard a guy going around the country, and probably a lot of your listeners have heard of him. His name was John Todd. He was going around to a lot of churches at the time talking about the Illuminati, and I'm not going to debate the point of whether he was who he said he was, but needless to say, about 90% of what he said was the truth. And I really started to do research based on the things he was saying, really trying to debunk it because I didn't really believe it. But the further I got into it, I mean, most of the stuff he really said was true about the Illuminati. So that's basically where my research started from. I started researching it when I was in college in 1978, did about 6 years of work trying to put together a manuscript so I could send to publishers. And there was a Christian bookstore in my area who said, well, I'll tell you what, while you're doing that, why don't you let me have copies to sell down here? So he began selling them out of the store. And at that time, I know Ralph Epperson's book came out in 1984, and basically that's when mine, I won't say came out because it really wasn't being offered to the general public just out of this one store while I was trying to sell the manuscript. And then when I self-published it in 1994, then it basically began to take off. A lot of copies began selling, and you know that was at the advent of Desert Storm and the Persian Gulf War. And you know you began hearing about the New World Order where you didn't hear about it before. And so I began to put everything together of where we basically, how we got to that point, things that were going on behind the scenes that you really weren't aware of, like I said, because they don't teach you things at school.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, David actually got involved with this when he was a very young boy, 10 or 11. His mother would take him to church, and they went to church every day. And, of course, he was hearing a gentleman named John Todd at the time, who I believe he claimed he'd been part of some group known as the Illuminati, and he was talking about how they intended to change the course of the world and simply unite the world, destroy all existing governments and religion. And of course, David tried to disprove it, but as he studied it, it became obvious that there really was a group known as the Illuminati, and it had had a profound influence, and its desire was to certainly destroy the existing governments and then unite everything into a new world order. But it also had a strong a religious component to it. This is, I think, what a lot of people don't understand. The idea to create a world government has a counterpart in the spiritual or in religion. Would you like to sort of pick up on that idea, David?
Well, you know, a lot of people will, in my studies and my research, kind of the root of a lot of that genre, they'll want to say it's a Jewish conspiracy. You'll have another thought that says it's an English royalty conspiracy. You know, my whole thing is that it's a satanic conspiracy.
And you're absolutely right. There's some people tell you it's a Vatican conspiracy. The people tell you it's a Jesuit conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And of course the old idea it's a Zionist conspiracy. And certainly there are people in all of these organizations who are part of the common denominator, which is a satanic conspiracy.
Right.
But it is not primarily Catholic. It is not primarily Jewish. It is not primarily Zionist. Certainly, although some people in those organizations play a part in it, and certainly some people within Masonry, some people within the Protestant Church. At the highest levels of the Catholic Church are there not to profess the gospel, but of course to change the music and the message of the church and to lead the evangelical Protestant Christians away from the truth. That case in point would be the man who is in charge of the 30 million member American Association of Evangelical Christians, a man named Ted Haggard, who just happened, eventually became obvious, was a cocaine-using homosexual who was using his position to undermine the Protestant and evangelical belief. But the average evangelical has never understood that. He never would have been there. Ted Haggard never would have led the evangelical Christians if he hadn't had other people planted in the hierarchy of organized Protestant faith pushing his candidacy. And why don't we go right ahead and pick the story up, David? Anyway, you give a fascinating dissertation on the background of the Illuminati, and how does that apply, though, today?
Well, the thing about it is, when you study the birth and growth of and you really can't call it an Illuminati; it's just a general term, and they have an unnamed title that you hear whispered, but nobody really knows what that is. But what began basically with Satan wanting to get back in control of the world when he lost it, when it was given to Adam and Eve. And he's been trying to get control of it ever since then. And the organization itself, which would be what most people refer to as the Master Conspiracy, has a lot of fingers that has been put into a lot of different areas, making it all going to come together in the end for Satan's own devices. And that is, controlling the finances, controlling political situations, controlling religion and controlling entertainment and, controlling all these little aspects, and all the people who are involved in all these various areas think that theirs is the only one that's important in the scheme of things, when in fact they're all working in concert together to achieve this goal that Satan has and what he thinks is going to achieve his aim in the final end. And, we are looking at, something that has been very well planned out, that has been, when they started out, they basically started out controlling education, because that's the way they were able to indoctrinate people through the years to get them to believe that, world peace is the way to go, making everybody even on the playing field as far as finances is the way to go. That's going to bring world peace. And giving up things in this country so other countries are made to appear like we are, and maybe if they're like we are, they're not gonna want to have war. They're gonna want to have peace. And people that are working towards the aim of world peace and world government, they think they're working towards something good, when in fact they're part of a plan that's fitting into the schemes of what Satan intends.
And I think it's really so interesting today. We share these cries for democracy over there in Cairo. Isn't it wonderful we're going to have democracy and freedom? They don't understand. They're simply pawns in the game.
Right.
They'll probably end up far worse off than they were even under the brutality and the brutal regime of Mubarak. I mean, it's just like the people in Cuba. Right? After all, Batista was bad, and boy, they were going to overthrow Batista. And, of course, Fidel Castro never won a battle. We simply turned the government over to him. I talked to the American ambassador to Cuba, Earl Smith. We have an interview with him. You can see on one of our DVDs. It's called The World Revolution. Ambassador Smith will tell you he was ordered to go to the president of Cuba, who was duly elected. His name was Batista. He actually was elected. He had expanded his role, his power, because, of course, he was threatened with overthrow by a communist movement. movement. Everybody knew it was a communist movement, except the American people who were being told, oh, this is a movement for democracy. But Ambassador Smith told me personally he was ordered to go to Batista and say, you will leave Cuba tomorrow, which of course meant that Fidel Castro was going to come to power with his communist regime. And for 6 months to a year, they kept telling us Americans, oh, he was just a sort of an agrarian reformer. Oh, shucks, he fooled us. Oh, my goodness. And this is just what's going on over in Cuba, Egypt today. It's like Deja Vu all over again. We've sent our representatives to Mubarak to tell him he will leave. And he is going to leave. When you get an offer from the Americans, it's like an offer from the mafia. It's an offer you better not refuse. Same thing with the Shah. It's happened over and over again. General Somoza in Nicaragua. The technique is used again and again. It always works. And if they don't leave, why, of course, there's an assassination. And they leave either on their 2 feet or laying on a slab. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the American government kills world leaders. If you doubt that, you need to read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, a very liberal individual, but I like John. He's risked his life to tell the truth. He worked for NSA. NSA knows this agency. Far more powerful than the CIA, far more people in it. But let's get back, of course, to David, because what he talks about is the fact that there has been this organization around. It's a continuation of an age-old effort of Satan to bring about a one-world government. Now, David, when you talk to people about Satan, I mean, this is an abstract idea. I mean, that there really could be a Luciferian force in the world. How do we convince people that this is not simply, you know, Bible-y is a ravings, you know, coming from an outdated book that has long since been discredited? How can we make them understand that this is the reality of what's happening based upon the Word of God?
Well, the thing about it is, and that's why the Word of God is being diluted today to make, you know, in some cases, making Satan look like the God of light, which he's not. And the thing about it is what we try to do is we put on each end of the spectrum, we have God and we have Satan. And, you know, what that does is it kind of creates an illusion, because right now what is happening is, all these people that have been giving in to what ultimately is the satanic conspiracy, and they're giving into this, for whatever means they're achieving out of it, publicity, riches, money, fame, and, they think that, they're going to achieve something in the end out of all that, when in fact Satan is basically using everyone as a pawn. And basically Satan knows he's not going to win. I mean, he's more well-versed in the scriptures than most Christians, and he knows what his end is going to be. However, what I like to do is kind of compare it to someone who's like has gone in to rob a bank, and the police come, the whole bank is surrounded by cops, and he knows he's not going to get away with what he's doing. However, what he's going to try to do is kill as many people he can while he can. And that's what Satan's going to do. Satan's going to destroy as many people as he can while he can, because he knows he only has a short time on this, on this earth. So, and I think that's what a lot of people need to realize, that, the scriptures are being diluted to kind of lessen the role that Satan supposedly is, that he's not really the guy. And it's just like the gospel of Judas that was released, and how it tried to make Judas look like, he was doing Jesus a favor what he was doing. A lot of they're trying to turn the tables in a lot of things, making what is bad look like it's good.
That's so good. They make good look bad, bad look good, white look dark look light. What you're seeing is so much of what's going on is simply mirror images. In fact, as we have in Christianity, a holy trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, they have an unholy trinity. Satan, the Antichrist, the false prophet. Certainly is the things that we think are good, noble, concerned about your fellow man. They want to destroy the fellow man. Why do you think they're suppressing cancer treatments? Why do you think they're spraying us with, aluminum and other things that will destroy the soil and create illness? But these things are not imaginary. They're very real, ladies and gentlemen, very real. Well, go right ahead, David. What do you want to talk about the Illuminati? How would you like to approach this story this evening?
Well, the Illuminati, does refer to a group.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
The Nixon administration with Gerald Ford, so they elected Jimmy Carter, and after a while, why, my goodness, the whole world begins to crumble. I mean, we turn, of course, Nicaragua over to the communists. Force Somoza leave Nicaragua, and then he is assassinated. And then, of course, we topple the Shah of Iran and bring the radical Ayatollahs to power, and we topple the government in Iraq and bring Saddam Hussein to power. And then, of course, we go ahead and incite the Afghan war. Begin the Afghan war, and suddenly we topple the government over in Zimbabwe, and Rhodesia became Zimbabwe. We topple them, put a communist in power there, and people are saying, "Boy, this guy's a real loser." You know, boy, we never should have bought him. So now they're going to have a Republican president, and along comes Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan is going to give us, give us a balanced budget. Boy, we're going to have a balanced budget, and Jimmy Carter's a big spender. Jimmy Carter put out a deficit of $200 billion in 4 years. How irresponsible. Ronald Reagan, the conservative, gets in, and he gives us a deficit of $200 billion every year he's in office. On average, when he comes to power, we're $1 trillion in debt. When he leaves office, we're $2.7 trillion in debt. He's going to cut taxes. He did initially. And then he gave us the largest tax increase in the history of our nation when he doubled Social Security and Medicare. We never talk about that. We know what happened because we like Ronald Reagan, and I do too. I think that he said everything I believe. And we were proud to be Americans. He was going, of course, to cut back on government. He expanded government. He was going, of course, to defeat the communists, and of course, he went right along with this phony collapse of communism so we could funnel massive amounts of money and technology into this new regime run by exactly the same people, by the same communists. But of course, we call them the KGB, we call them the oligarchs, and it's over and over and over again. Whatever Ronald Reagan's motivation, maybe he was simply told exactly what to do. Many people believe he did what he was doing because, of course, it's just a coincidence that a man tried to kill Ronald Reagan. His name was Hinckley. And he just happened to be, of all the people in the entire country, he happened to be very close. His parents were very close to the Bush family, and had Hinckley succeeded, George Herbert Walker Bush would have become the President of the United States. He was the Vice President, of course, who was forced upon Reagan by Kissinger and Ford, who told him that he would not be allowed to be President unless he let George Herbert Walker Bush begin to take control of government, which he did. And Ronald Reagan spoke out against the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations when he was running, and when he was in office, almost 280 members of the Trilateral Commission, CFR, were in key positions in the Reagan administration, and nobody will ever tell you that. Well, certainly, should we be concerned about the way things are going today, David?
Well, with Obama and having basically kind of a rock star status, while he was campaigning, and it seemed like I know some people almost felt like it was a guilt trip, that they almost felt like they had to vote for him because he was black. And my feeling is that if America wanted to elect a black man, I could think of other more worthy candidates for that role if that's what America wanted to do. But they elevated Obama to this rock star status and drawing huge crowds wherever he was at. And then the right off the bat, the emphasis was on health care. They were going to push this through. All the media attention was on health plan and what they were going to do. And then you had the stimulus package. And when I see things like that, I mean, these were two real big issues. And when I see big issues like that, I see, well, you want to take the focus off of other things with these big issues out front so they can work behind the scenes to do what they really want to do.
You're absolutely right. I mean, some people believe that Obama is a socialist. Some people believe he's a Marxist communist. Some people believe, you know, he's a Muslim. Some people believe he's a homosexual. And all of those are diversions. I mean, it is not who Obama is. It is who controls Obama and tells him what to do. He is a figurehead for what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. What do you call them? Do you have a name for them, David?
There's really, you know, I've heard of, I've heard different names in my research and talking to different people, but, you know.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is David Rivera, and we're talking about his book, Final Warning, A History of the New World Order. And it is an excellent history of the New World Order. I was just asking David about, you know, what we would call this group. And he refers to them as they. That's probably as good a name as any. Actually, of course, one of the subdivisions was the group Secret Society, organized by Cecil Rhodes. And they didn't want a name because if they didn't have a name, nobody could refer to them. They called themselves us. Or the group or us, and that's, that was really very, very clever. It shows that if you don't have a name, how are you going to identify them?
and really, whenever they have a group, whatever group they have, and you can look at, the Bilderbergers Trilateral Commission, any group you look at, the Masons, they always have an inner circle, you know, in each of these groups, and, you know, nobody really knows who the inner circle is, but that's where the true power lies, and in these groups, but there ultimately is a handful of men who run the world, basically.
And of course, with the Masons, I mean, a lot of Masons will say, why, that's the most ridiculous. I mean, you think that we're part of a conspiracy to run the world? That's so ridiculous. I've been a Mason for, you know, all my life, and I've never heard of anything like that. And they look so honest, and most of them are absolutely honest. They have no idea what Masonry is all about, that Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity, an outer fraternity, an inner fraternity. There are lots of good people in the Council on Foreign Relations, and I'm sure I have a very good friend who attended a Bilderberger meeting. He'll be one of our guests in the near future. He's already lined up. He was an American ambassador who actually negotiated the SALT treaties back 20 years ago under the Reagan administration. And he attended Bilderberger meetings. He didn't see anything subversive going on there. And I think this is true. I think that most people affiliated with the organizations have no idea what it's really about. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question for David. But David, before we go on, I want you to give out your website. Tell people how they can get in touch with you and get this book, and it's an excellent book. And your section on the New World Order, and of course, all the people who've referred to it over and over and over again. And they all support this idea of the transformation of the world. But, of course, the thing is, this is a subversive movement, because if they establish this world government, they will have to destroy our Constitution. And these people, many of them, of course, work at the highest levels of our government, having sworn allegiance to our nation, doing everything they can to destroy it. So how can people get in touch with you and get your book?
Okay, well, to get the book, probably the cheapest way to go is to go to the website of the publisher, and that is www.progressivepress.com. And then you just go there, hit the books tab, and then you can order it right from the website. The price on the website is $14.95. If you order it from Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com, it's going to be $18.95. But he has it for $14.95 on the website. And I can also give you a number for credit card orders if you would want me to do that.
Go right ahead, because you've done a lot of work on this book, and I commend you for it.
I appreciate
it. Well
that.
Written, and so how tell? I'll give you an opportunity to get people to buy the book.
Okay, and that number would be for credit card orders would be 760-366-3695, and of course with my website, basically all my writing and my research is on the website, and that website is www.comingjudgment, and that's judgment with an E, J-U-D-G-E-M-E-N-T. That's comingjudgment.250x.com. And some people sort of say to me, why do I put everything on my website? And the current book is not on my website. The current book it's not my book. It's the publisher has the rights to that. The original manuscript that was originally printed back in 2004, that is what is on my website, and that basically is two books in one. And when Progressive Press had approached me about publishing it, it basically said, you have too much here. I can't publish the whole thing. We're gonna split it up and publish the first book, and that's what they did. But on my website, basically everything is there that I've done, and it's probably not good for business. But on the other hand, I'm not a salesman. Okay, I believe that I have the role of a watchman on the wall, and so I basically feel like you know what I find out. And what I can expose, I want people to be able to have access to that. And that's why I basically put everything on my website so people can see everything that I put out there. And, you know, probably not good for business, but I don't feel like I'm here to be a salesman. I've literally spent thousands of hours, putting everything together. My wife refers to it as the book, and I've really, I've lost a lot of time with my kids growing up because of the research that I've done, and it's sort of my baby, and I'm still investing in it. One I'm currently doing right now is I'm reformatting the second half. The whole purpose of the book was to be to have its own niche. I think one of the best books out there is The Unseen Hand by Ralph Emerson. I believe that if you buy any book, from a secular point of view, that would be the book to buy.
And that incidentally, we do carry that book by Ralph Emerson, The Unseen Hand. Go ahead.
Right. So what I felt like my niche was joining it together with Bible prophecy, so you can see. You can see the progress of where things are going and how Bible prophecy is going to be fulfilled. And what I've been doing for the past 3 years, I've been very deep into Bible research, and I believe that God is showing me some things that I don't believe has been put out there before. And so what I hoped in the second part of the book, which is going to be Final Warning, Coming Judgment. And it's there's going to be a lot of things that's going to, Bible prophecy is very, it's a very hard thing for people to grasp, number one, and believe, number two. And what I hope to do is by using the word to explain the word and, really give a progression through the Bible of where we're coming to the fulfillment of all things. So that's what I'm working on now, and I'm not in a hurry to do it. I'm in basically every waking moment is spent on it, but I'm doing it right. I remember back in 94 when I was putting it together, the self-published, and I started getting into scripture, and I really wasn't happy about how I handled it at the time, because a lot of people, even though it was intended to be a Christian book, it was never really accepted in the Christian marketplace, and that's that's always that, you know, kind of hurt me, because it was intended to be a witnessing tool. It was intended to be an expose. And so now, you know, when the second book comes out, it will be a Christian book, you know. So,
well, people can't understand that when you're talking about these things, you're really talking about biblical prophecy. But we are witnessing today the unfolding of biblical prophecy. I mean, you go back and you read the Revelation, and they talk about, you know, the time is going to come where you'll neither buy nor sell, that you wear the mark of the beast or be known by the number of his name. And, you know, you stop and look back 2,000 years ago, who could have imagined that they would actually be able to talk about a cashless society, that you would actually certainly be able to use a credit card or debit card, or now the next thing they're going to do is they're going to have you be able to use your cell phone, and you're going to have a cell phone, and that you'll be able to wave that close to the reader, and it'll pick it up. And everything, of course, will be done increasingly by electronics. They've announced now that no longer will they issue government checks, unemployment, Medicare, Social Security checks. You will no longer get a Social Security check. It will be deposited in your bank account. You don't have a bank account? Well, if you want to get your check, you will have a bank account. And then before long, you will not be writing checks. Everything will be done electronically. And you say, well, I don't know how to do that. Well, you're going to have to learn. Either that, you're not going to eat. We are moving towards a cashless society. How could they have known 2,000 years ago what would be unfolding today? How would they have known 2,000 years ago that Israel would be constituted as a nation? Now, I'll give all the reasons why, you know, the wicked Zionists established it, and of course they had this idea, and they wanted, of course, push all the Palestinians out of there and mistreat the Palestinians. And there's a lot of unjust things that have happened as the Israelis have reclaimed the land there. And it is not a truly Jewish state. A lot of Jews there, but, I mean, a lot of the Jews don't even believe in God. Only about half of them really believe in God. It has to do sort of being part of a club. But, of course, God works in strange ways, and I believe that this is prophesied, it's come about, I don't understand it, but what are the chances of a nation being reconstituted after 2,000 years? And I'm sure you've addressed this as well in your studies, haven't you, David?
Oh, of course. I mean, even from the dates in Daniel, you can really see where, you know, things as far as when... back in the early 20s when the English came in and took over Jerusalem, and that, you know, set the stage for Israel becoming a nation in 1948. And, you know, when you look at all the date stamps that are in the book of Daniel, it very much shows you that, this is what's been prophesied, that these are God's people, that, you know, they're not usurpers. And the miracles that have happened during their wars, I mean, when many nations have gone against Israel and have lost, and with even the support of Russia, and they've lost, and, you know, winning wars in 6 days, you know, and just embarrassing, really, literally, as a small country, embarrassing, you know, militaries much larger than their own. I mean, this is the hand of God. These are miracles. And I believe that if the people... there were not true Jewish people, then I don't think these things would have happened. And, you know, that's why it kind of hurts when I hear the different things about, well, they're not true Jewish people. The true Jewish people were integrated into other peoples, and they're mixed all over the place. Now, all the Jews are coming together in fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Israel became a nation because of the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. You know, they're going to fulfill a huge part in end time prophecy. You know, so I believe it's been foretold. And, you know, people need to, and, you know, you wouldn't believe how many people who identify themselves as Christians yet don't believe their own Bible. You know, they give lip service to believing in the Bible, but if some people would be truly honest, they would say, well, you know, a lot of the Bible is subjective. A lot of the Bible is symbolic. You know, it's not meant to be taken literally. And I'm one who believes that every word of the Bible is meant to be taken literally. It is the truth.
Well, I believe it is true, and I think that is really what makes it so fascinating, as we see this whole story unfolding. And of course, we have a wonderful video, 10-video set called it's put out by Pastor Billy Crone. Maybe my wife will call it God's Final Warning, I think it is. Very, very similar to yours. And basically it's 10 DVDs that simply just chronicle exactly what's going on and the prophetic significance. You know, they're told in the latter days there's going to be a tremendous increase in knowledge. People don't understand that 120 years ago, the major means of transportation was still the horse. And 130 years ago, and there'd been very little absolute progress until suddenly an explosion of knowledge 130 years ago, and look where we are today. In fact, knowledge is doubling literally every 10 years. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and David does a wonderful job of cataloging the background of the Illuminati, and then, of course, he gets into the Federal Reserve Act, and he gets into, of course, the things that are going on in America today, and the history of the Fabian Society, and the great tax-exempt foundations, and so many things of that sort. Well, we've got Barbara calling in. Again, if you're out there across America, wire telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. I think the title is The Final Countdown. That's it. Hi, Barbara. Do you have a question or comment?
No, I was just going to say that Pastor Billy's set probably would have been The Final Countdown.
That is what it is,
and
The Final Countdown,
yeah,
right.
It's two volumes in 10 discs, I believe.
And really,
so they're very good.
It really is. We have a book going along with that. Thank you, Barbara. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. I am listening.
All right, fine. Well, my telephone number, of course, Barbara, if you haven't suspected, is my wife, and she's my partner in everything we do. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But David has put his whole heart and soul into this, and the material in here, fascinating, because of course it begins pointing. In fact, I couldn't help but notice in the opening pages, the first page, as he opens, and he's quoting Henry Kissinger, who's basically talking, you know, back in here he is, January 5th, 2009, and Henry Kissinger is talking on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, and he said this, referring to, of course, President Obama. The president-elect is coming into office at a moment when there is an upheaval in many parts of the world simultaneously. You have India, Pakistan, you have the jihadist movement. So we can't really say there is one problem that is the most important one. But it can give a new impetus in American foreign policy, partly because the reception of him is so extraordinary around the world. I think his task will be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period when, really, a new world order can be created. It's a great opportunity. It's not a crisis. What a wonderful quotation. That actually was January 5th, 2009, just a little over 2 years ago, and he's already talking about the jihadist movement. How many Americans were concerned about it? Well, Henry Kissinger knew what it was all about because our government had been pushing and financing the jihadist movement and the Muslim Brotherhood and the radical Islamic movement, covered beautifully in a book we carry called The Devil's Game, and it is the devil's game. And, of course, we are playing the devil's game of creating an opposition throughout the world, and an awful lot of people are going to die in the coming nuclear war in the Middle East because we've turned the plans for the nuclear weapons over to the Pakistanis. How in the world do you honestly think that a third world nation like Pakistan, who would have the wherewithal, the technology, the science to develop a nuclear weapon. If it hadn't come from America, it did, and we sent it there. And that's the Sybil Edmonds story, January 2008. Read it and weep.
You know,
go ahead, David.
Dr. Stan, you know, when you said that quote, you know, you and I and others who have done research into the subject, I mean, found that to be a shocking comment. But the general public didn't. You know, basically going back to the first Persian Gulf War during the first Bush administration, you know, if you remember back at that time, they issued trading cards for the war. And that was one of the things they helped cement in people's mind, is this new world order is a good thing. I mean, I just could not believe. I mean, how many other wars do you ever remember that they had trading cards? You know, and at the time, you know, when I saw that, I just found that to be incredible, and how they were using that instrument to be able to, you know, brainwash people into trying to convince them that this war and this new world order is a good thing.
Well, unfortunately, we are having in a very, very difficult situation because so many Americans don't understand prophecy. They don't understand the Bible. They've been dumbed down as far as an understanding of history, and they don't understand that we are actually today living in the most exciting, dangerous, frightening time in the history of our nation. What a wonderful time to know the Lord. And I hope if you're out in the listening audience, you have a personal relationship with Him. And if you don't, you need to get down on your knees and just ask the Lord to come in and direct your life. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this first hour of Radio Liberty here. Well, David, you go right ahead. You got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
You know, when you know, if there's people listening to this broadcast who really you're new to the subject of the New World Order.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dry Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.
Website again.
Well, the telephone number to order would be 760-366-3695. And to order off the website would be www.progressivepress.com. When you hit the home page, hit the books tab, and you can order right from there.
All right. God bless, and thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate it, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and put things into the perspective. Understand that what you are witnessing today in the Near East and the Middle East is part of long-range planning. How do we know it's long-range planning? Well, because the CIA and the MI6, British Intelligence, have been actually funding the radical Islamic movement. The book, The Devil's Game, we carry it now. The book says they created a Frankenstein, they created a mosque, they created the Muslim Brotherhood, they financed Muslim Brotherhood, but it's like a Frankenstein, it got loose and I fear that is a mistake. They created a Frankenstein, and he did just what they wanted him to do. And, of course, this is going to radicalize the whole Islamic world and lead to a major war with the Muslim world. Why? Because, of course, if you read the writings of the occultists, they tell you they want to get rid of the monotheistic religions. Christianity, Judaism, and the Muslim world, what better way than to kill hundreds of millions of them? Oh, that couldn't happen. Are you absolutely certain? Will you bet your life on it? Well, first of all, you know, if I could suggest, we have the book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my book. Brotherhood of Darkness and then The Devil's Game. We have this great 10-DVD set. It's 5 part 1 and 5 DVDs part 2, The Final Countdown. And we actually carry Pastor Bella Crone's book, The Final Countdown. It's well worthwhile getting, reading and studying it so you can speak intelligently about all the prophetic things that are happening today. And we certainly recommend them to you. Certainly we carry a couple of DVDs which we think look upon as weapons. How do we get people out of their apathy? How do we get them to be more concerned about their lives and the lives of members of their family than we are about the unfolding saga of Tiger Wood? Lindsay Lohan, the fact that she just got off again, but the judge says, you just do that 13 more times, you're going to be in real trouble, little lady. And then, of course, our concern would be about how wonderful it is that Aaron Rodgers and the team there Green Bay has won the Super Bowl. Well, anyway, of course, we do hope that you begin looking at what's really going on. This is why we do what we do. And so we do hope that you want to get our material. You go to our website at radioliberty.com. If you're in a position to help us financially, we could certainly use your help. We are beginning to offer, and it is a full house water filtration system. We carry the big Berkey. You should have them for emergency purposes, and they will do an excellent job of removing the impurities from your water. And of course, if you have the Berkey light, you can get the fluoride out if you have the special fluoride filters. But that's only out of your drinking water. If you shower or bathe, you're going to get fluoride. It's absorbed to your skin. So we've come up and we've found a very efficient a total home program. If you can find the copper pipe going into your home, this works. If you want more information, the total home fluoride filtration system takes out the other heavy metals, chloride, aluminum, lead, arsenic. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Something you should seriously think about. A total home filtration system that will take the fluoride out of your water. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
While the storm clouds gather,
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest for the next hour is William Grigg, former senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now, of course, writing blogs on a regular basis, and certainly one of the most insightful commentators on current events, our good friend William Grigg. Hi, how are you tonight, William?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, and why don't you just go right ahead?
I really appreciate the opportunity, and one of the things we're going to have to talk about this week, as we have, I think, for the last couple of weeks, are really the epical events that are taking place right now in Egypt.
I think that most people don't understand, my goodness, isn't it wonderful, we're going to get rid of that terrible Mubarak, and we're going to get democracy, and the people are going to be so much better off, and they're going to be free, and if you believe that, ladies and gentlemen, why, of course, I've got a tunnel we're investing in from San Francisco to Shanghai, and you can get it on the bottom floor of that. Go right ahead.
I think you probably get subsidized shares in that undertaking, quite frankly. Fannie and Freddie have got to be doing something with all the money that they're getting through the Fed and its appurtenances. But in any case, I think there's a cultivated dichotomy, if you will, on the part of the public reaction to what's going on in Egypt. Roughly half of the time, or roughly half of the public, most of the time, is delirious with joy, or at least professes to be happy over what's going on in Egypt. And the other half of the time, or the other half of the public, professes to be terrified because they've been fed a line about the nature of the threat that plays right into the narrative of the people who have engineered this entire mess in the Middle East. That line, of course, would have us believe that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to take control of Egypt, which is a possibility, albeit not the type of possibility that's being depicted for public consumption. We're supposed to believe that the Muslim Brotherhood has always been characterized by hostility, antipathy toward the West, and generally the United States in particular, when actually, if you take a look at the history of that organization, to the extent that it is, it has had a profile with respect to Washington, it's been in the role of asset of the CIA, of the State Department. They've been on the receiving end of a lot of largesse from Washington, from London. And with respect to Hamas, which is the Palestinian offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, from Israeli intelligence, the CIA as well. And so you're dealing with a cultivated menace. You like to say, Dr. Stan, that we are always presented with the best enemy that our money can buy. And if the Muslim Brotherhood ends up being cast for that role, that's another example of this familiar choreography that's become so tiresome and that has caused so much bloodshed in the Middle East and elsewhere. And so you're given your choice of two possibilities here. Either you're supposed to be rejoicing over the fall of Mubarak, or you're supposed to be terrified over the rise of the caliphate. And I think what's going to happen is the public's going to get whipsawed between those two alternatives. And neither one of them adequately describes what's going on here.
And I think that's so important. What people don't understand is you're supposed to choose one side or the other. I mean, do you want Mubarak to stay in power, or do you want him to leave power and take a chance on the Muslim Brotherhood? People don't understand it's all stage-managed. It's political theater. There are other alternatives, but they're never mentioned. This whole thing has been orchestrated by the Brotherhood of Darkness, which has been working for a long time on a timetable for just what is unfolding in the Middle East and the Near East today. Go right ahead.
I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the things I thought was interesting was that a chant was taken up a couple of days ago in Tahrir Square. The chant was, "It's a play. It's a play." There was a contingent among the protesters who at least had sufficient awareness of what's going on to recognize that they were playing a role. They were cast in a role, and they were playing a part in a melodrama that had been written by other people. I think that's really quite remarkable.
Well, I think the tragedy is the Egyptian people are going to end up a lot worse than they were. My fear is that there is going to be a major wars in that part of the world. My fear is that Pakistan has nuclear weapons that were delivered to them by our own State Department. And, of course, there's going to be a terrible, terrible loss of life before this is over. Well, William, you go ahead and pick up the story. This unfolding story, because it's in the piece. If anybody thinks this is the end of the story, this is just perhaps the end of the beginning as other countries in that part of the world began toppling. We've already lost Tunisia and Turkey, and we've already lost Lebanon. Imagine that. Four countries now, within a matter of simply 6 months, have had to come total change of their leadership, and at least two of those have, that is Lebanon and Turkey, have gone to the radical Islamic camp. Go right ahead.
What's happened in Egypt, of course, is that you had a military coup, and those happen with some regularity in Egypt. I've been in Egypt, I've mentioned before, on a couple of occasions. I spent some time in Egypt, and I was able to talk with people there about the way that power is structured. You can learn a lot by going to the Kala Khalili, the open-air market, and talking with people. There were a few English speakers there. And I spent a lot of time talking with people in the hotel where I was staying, including the entrepreneur who owned the hotel, who lived in New York and was very hospitable to me. And then at the Cairo International Conference Center, at the UN conference, I talked with a lot of local folks who were not particularly enamored with the government of Mubarak, who, of course, was a former, I believe, colonel in the Air Force who was elevated to that position after Anwar Sadat was murdered in 1981. And he was the recipient of tens of billions of dollars. His regime was the recipient of tens of billions of dollars in pilfered aid from United States taxpayers. The thing, forgive my cough, I'm still dealing with a bit of a respiratory virus, and so it's going to be a little bit of a rough ride this evening. The thing about what happened in Cairo, I'm convinced, is that they've externalized, if you will, the underlying mechanism of power that has always controlled that government, which is the military. And I've been through a military coup when I was living in Guatemala in 1983. I've mentioned this before, too, but I think it's relevant to our conversation this evening, Dr. Stan. Efrain Rios Montt, who had been a member of the Guatemalan military, had been put in the position of president of Guatemala with the help of the CIA, was removed from that position through a coup in 1983. I believe it was May of 1983 that there was a golpe de Estado. There was a coup in which the military, a junta of military officers, overthrew Rios Montt. He was spirited out of the country by the CIA, taken to a Caribbean island, I don't know which one, before the palace coup actually took place. And then for about a week, everything was locked down, and he had helicopter gunships plying the skies over Guatemala City, and bodies started to appear on the streets. As a matter of fact, that state of affairs existed for a number of months until, I believe it was Cereza, was elected in 1984, 1985, and some semblance of civilian rule was established.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William was talking about a coup in Guatemala when he was there. Was Guatemala when you were there?
Yes, Guatemala.
Guatemala, and the man who had been put in power by the CIA was removed, probably by the same people?
Yes.
Okay, well, is what we do. We put them in power. We take them out of power. They're told what to do. You know, sometimes you put people into power, and then these ungrateful people don't do what you tell them to.
Exactly.
And so you remove them one way or another. Sometimes you'd give them an offer they can't refuse, or you create a revolt, or you create a war, or you simply have them killed. Go ahead.
Yeah. The thing I find interesting is that what happened in Guatemala is that you had a coup in 1983, but you go back to 1954, that's when Jacobo Arbenz was overthrown with the help of the CIA, and the year before, Iran, the government of Mossadegh, was overthrown, which is a joint production of the CIA and the MI6. The year before that, you had the military coup in Egypt, which once again was an Anglo-American production that brought Nasser to power. And one constant in all this is a fellow by the name of Frank J. Wisner. And Mr. Wisner's son, who has the same name, has been instrumental in what's been going on in Cairo over the last couple of weeks. There's been some changes in the narrative that Mr. Wisner has been retailing on behalf of the people who actually run things behind the scenes. Here's a guy who's been very deeply involved in just about every large-scale establishment dirty undertaking since he became a member of the diplomatic corps some 30 or 40 years ago. His father was the guy who basically put together the operational directorate for the CIA that specializes in coups and counter coups of the sort that we're dealing with here. And they seem to happen at irregular but somewhat predictable intervals. So what I think has happened is that, once again, you've had a situation where they have gone back and pulled the plug on somebody they had previously installed. Mubarak had no significant existence as a ruler apart from his dependency on the United States and the Anglo-American elite that put him into power. And he was somebody who managed to consolidate his power over the course of several decades with the help of some other unsavory source. And that means that he was there to be a regional administrator for that entente that you refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness, which is a far scarier outfit than the Muslim Brotherhood, as terrible as some elements of the Muslim Brotherhood certainly are. The Brotherhood of Darkness I find to be several orders of magnitude worse because they're the people who actually pull the strings. But what has happened is that the underlying mechanism of power has now been made overt. And if you go back, and those of you who've been to my blog, Pro Libertate, freedominourtime.blogspot.com, freedominourtime.blogspot.com, back on the 31st of last month, I wrote a piece called Saviors in Uniform, and I pointed out that 2 years ago, the Carnegie Endowment people who published Foreign Policy magazine were talking about the scenario that we've seen unfold over the last couple of weeks. The military was going to have to step in and take direct control of the Mubarak regime because Mubarak had grown senile. He's dying of cancer. He's somebody who has never been particularly bright or adept. He's been very good at pilfering a large percentage of what's been sent to him, the wealth that's been extracted at gunpoint from taxpayers in this country. He's put together a fortune that is conservatively estimated to be in the billions. There are some grandiose estimates that say it's between 40 and 70 billion that would make him considerably wealthier than the wealthiest man in the world, which is Mr. Slim, I believe, over in Mexico. I don't think that his fortune is quite so grandiose, but he is certainly wealthier than Croesus. He probably has a net worth in the $5 to $7 billion range. And this is a guy who a couple of days ago, just yesterday actually, was describing himself as a poor but earnest son of the homeland, someone who had lived and died, or not died yet, but had lived in Egypt and given his life on behalf of his beloved fatherland, and how he intended for his bones to be interred in the precious soil of his beloved Egypt, and all this nonsense. And he's nothing of the sort. He is a courtesan. He's somebody who's been bought and paid for by the elite behind the scenes. And so there was something invigorating, and I think deeply satisfying about the fact that, to at least a certain extent, the people who had been manipulated by these forces behind the scenes, who were on the streets of Cairo, they understood the phoniness of what was being done. But they are so desperate, they're so poor, they're so sick of living under a regime that specializes in terror, repression, and torture, and one that has turned their country really into a satrapy of a distant foreign power. They were sick of what's going on. They wanted some kind of a change and some sense of hope that there was going to be a change for the better. And unfortunately, what they have is a larger dose of the same affliction that they had been suffering from. And that's what I had talked about in this essay. What happened is that they were put into a situation where they were to turn to the military as their potential saviors. The essay I wrote starts off from with a quote from an Egyptian man, a demonstrator by the name of Mustafa Abdel, and he told Time magazine, "The army is all good men, but the police, every policeman is bad." He's talking, of course, about the black-shirted police, the paramilitary police, or the plainclothes secret police, who'd haul people away to be beaten and electrocuted and otherwise traumatized on the orders of the guy who's now in charge of the civilian face of this military junta, this Omar Suleiman, who's the head of the secret police, and he has been now for over a decade. And I pointed out in this essay once again a couple of weeks ago that he is the first Egyptian intelligence chief to have been given the luxury of a public persona. Starting in about 2001 or 2002, Suleiman suddenly became a figure of public note. He was sent to high-profile diplomatic functions overseas. He was sent to Washington and elsewhere to be photographed in the company of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and other high-ranking American military officials. He's managed to be photographed with every prime minister of Israel since 2001. I believe there have been a couple of changes of administration in Israel, and Suleiman is on very good terms with Netanyahu and Netanyahu's immediate predecessors. All this is unprecedented because they were cultivating him to be the guy who would take over for Mubarak, probably after a decent interval of military rule. And that's what we have right now, is a status in Egypt that has to be considered undisguised military rule. They're dissolving parliament, they are suspending the constitution, and they are going to be operating the Supreme Council of the Egyptian military as the civic administration, the civil administration, pending such time as they consider it to be worth, appropriate to have elections, which means they're going to be busily rigging whatever outcome their masters in Washington and London and elsewhere have determined would be suitable. They're going to be the ones who are going to be vetting the parties who will participate. They're the ones who are going to be scrutinizing the people who are going to be put up for election. And they're the ones who are going to be arranging the mechanism, the electoral mechanism, to bring about a desired outcome.
But, of course, there's really only one organized opposition there, and it's the Muslim Brotherhood,
yeah.
Of course, which, of course, has been financed by the CIA and MI6 going back many years, covered so well in the book we carry, The Devil's Game. And, ladies and gentlemen, we create the opposition, we create the on both sides, so you can have this whole thing. But I really believe, of course, that they want to turn this whole part of the world into a radical Islamic section. And somebody had commented today that one of the talk show hosts had actually somehow gotten hold of the yearbook from one of the major colleges there and the universities in Cairo, and was watching and looking suddenly at the pictures there of the graduating class, and commented that up to about 1980, 1990, why the women were dressed properly, as they would be going to American university, and then about 10, 20 years ago, it began to change, and they began wearing scarves on their heads and longer dresses, and they didn't have any low-cut breast lines. It is, they were covering themselves, you know, in the typical fashion of a Muslim woman. And increasingly, the graduates, you know, of the university there, turning back towards the traditional Muslim, in other words, not the westernized Muslim religion, but turning to this radical form of Islam, which we have been financing. Why in the world would we do that? I mean, this is against everything. I mean, for the just moderate Muslim, you don't want to live in the West. The radical Muslim wants jihad. They want, of course, to have the Islamic faith dominate the world. Why would America invest in creating a radical Islamic movement? Once again, the best enemy money could buy. Go ahead, William.
Yeah, that's a very good point, that we're dealing with something that has been diligently nurtured and cultivated by Washington. And I think that it's largely controlled by Washington. I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood has never really been that big of a player apart from the roles that it has carried out on behalf of its financiers here in the United States and in Great Britain, and, as I mentioned before, ironically enough, in Israel. And it's only been able to acquire political purchase in an electoral system with the help of its patrons. And since the last election, I think, several years ago, I can't remember when the last election was held in Egypt, you've had the Muslim Brotherhood acquire a small but cohesive bloc within the parliament. They've never been in a position to challenge the National Democratic Party, which is basically the preponderant and established party in what is, in all intents and purposes, a one-party state. It has been that way since Nasser. Actually, the National Democratic Party grew out of Nasser's Arab Socialist Union. And they've gone through the National Democratic Party and systematically destroyed any potential opposition to everybody but the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh, but of course the army now has outlawed that party. That's going to be outlawed. They're not going to be able to run candidates. So who then will we have? Well, we have one other party, the Muslim Brotherhood. Isn't that interesting? They're organized. They'll be able to field candidates. Where will the opposition come from? Well, the other one's been outlawed. Well, maybe they'll suddenly really adopt democracy. They'll suddenly have all the candidates come about, and If you believe that, once again, you can get on the ground floor of that submarine, that tunnel we're digging from San Francisco to Shanghai. We'll be right back. William, go right ahead. And if you need any more of our vitamins.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
Law, the only legitimate political party there is other than the radical Islamists, and everything is being done to set up the radical Islamists, the Muslim Brotherhood, to take over control of Sunni of Egypt. And as bad as Mubarak he was bad, he was wicked, he was a harsh dictator. Why, living under this new Islamic, radical Islamic regime, which is well organized, is going to be far worse. But it's not simply in Egypt this is being developed. This is being developed all throughout the Middle East, all throughout the Near East, and of course we're laying the basis for very, very serious consequences. The average person over there in Egypt has no idea that they're simply pawns in a game. Go right ahead.
Yeah, and, well, I don't know necessarily that there's no knowledge or understanding of that fact. I mean, once again, when you had briefly yesterday, before Mubarak's Don't Cry for Me, Lower Egypt speech, you had a chant taken up by some element of that throng there on Liberation Square. It's a play. It's a play. They understood that there was orchestration, that there had been a script writer, if you will. Somebody had written, some playwright had put together this melodrama. So there are some people that understood that. But take a look at what's going on in the demography and economy of Egypt. You'll understand why people are so desperate and why they're in a mindset where they're receptive to the idea that something has to be done right now to change things radically. You've got a huge, growing, young population in Egypt. It's roughly one-third, from what I understand, one-third of the entire Arab population of the Middle East and Northern Africa. Most of these people are 30, 35 years old and younger. There's a larger population, from what I understand, of males than females, which creates a really interesting stress demographically and in terms of the culture. And the economy there has been growing every year, at least in terms of the gross domestic product. A lot of that, of course, is an accounting of government debt, which is not productivity. I mean, if that's growth in the same sense that a tumor is growth, if you will. It's been growing in terms of gross domestic product every year for the last couple of decades, and yet the rate of poverty has also been growing because all the wealth is being siphoned into the hands of the oligarchy run by the military with Mubarak as the figurehead. And on top of this, you have a huge and growing problem of unemployment, and then you have a price shock on their staple food, which of course is wheat. And you've got people barely getting by, living a subsistence existence at the very best. There are 1 million or 1.5 million people in Cairo, which is a huge city, who are homeless, intractably homeless, who sleep every night in graveyards, while their supposedly patriotic, now ex-president, is able to go to a villa at Sharm el-Sheikh or to go overseas to any one of a half a dozen places in Europe to live, to enjoy a vacation in any of his luxurious villas. He has two yachts, both of which were serviced and repaired with money that had been sent to him by the Pentagon. People see this, and they understand that there really aren't any prospects for improvement unless something is done to break up the political permafrost and allow the possibility that something green will shoot up to the surface. Well, unfortunately, the green shoots coming up to the surface, if you will, are the green shoots of Islamic revolution, and they have been diligently tended by people who are in the business of planting and growing and then harvesting from their crop a windfall of bloodshed. People over here in the Western world, the power elite in the United States and Great Britain primarily.
And I think it's so important for people to recognize, of course, that the Federal Reserve System, America's central bank, which is owned by our banks in the Brotherhood of Darkness, plays a large part in this and bears large share of the responsibility. Because what are they doing? Why are they creating all sorts of inflation, but they're exporting it there. In other words, we have this massive trade deficit. So we're sending our money overseas and driving up costs in other countries while, of course, we live comfortably here with fairly stable prices, at least so far. We probably have about 6% inflation. But wait till the end of this year, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
Wait till the end of this year. I think we're going to see some of the most dramatic changes during this year that we've ever witnessed. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And Egypt is dependent on exports to the United States for wheat. And they're receiving, along with the wheat, the export of price inflation, and it's tearing their country apart. And what you're seeing there is a foretaste of the sort of thing we're going to experience here, I'm sorry to say.
And, of course, there's a tremendous drought. They're talking about China losing about a third of its crops. There are tremendous problems over in Australia. They've lost a lot of their crops over there. A wheat blight throughout Africa. And, well, just watch those wheat prices, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back in just a moment here with William Grigg.
Gather for a prophet.
William, go right ahead.
One of the interesting points you brought up, Dr. Stan, is that we're dealing here with the staff of life. Everything that people in Egypt eat is based on wheat, and they have to import the wheat from the United States. What people don't understand is that the United States is a net importer of wheat. We have been since 2004, 2005. Now think about that for a second. How on earth is it that the United States of America, the storied breadbasket of the world, is importing wheat? This is something I wrote about in the American Conservative a few years ago, and the easiest way to describe this, of course, is a form of manufactured interdependence. We're in a situation where we're importing wheat right now because of things that were done in the 1970s to destroy our ability to be self-sustaining in terms of that vital, irreplaceable staple food. And in Egypt, of course, when they are dealing with a price shock in that basic staple, everything goes up, and these people are already on the razor's edge of intractable, well, they're in intractable poverty, on the razor's edge of outright extinguishment. And so when something like that happens, it has immediate social consequences. And here in the United States, we're going to find that we're not going to be spared the consequences of the price shock that's going to come from the already building hyperinflationary pressures, but also the fact that we have been deprived of our ability to be a self-sustaining society because of the way that the people who operate the corporatist food combines have engineered this dependence with the rest of the world. It's perfectly insane. And this is the year I think the people are really going to start feeling the bite of this arrangement. And what's happening in Egypt right now in some ways, once again, is a foreshadowing, I think, of what we're going to be experiencing here in the United States before the end of the year, perhaps even before the end of the spring. I honestly think you take into account the factors you listed, Dr. Stan, about the poor harvest in China and the disasters that are afflicting Australia. You take a look at the fact that there are similar dislocations in the agricultural economy in Latin America. Those factors, plus price inflation, plus the perverse incentives of corporatist global food distribution.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William was just talking about his concern of the fact we're going to be having real problems with the price of bread in America. I heard a quotation today. I will not repeat it because it was so ridiculous, but it was suggesting that the price of bread was going to go up almost 10 times this year. I don't know whether it's true or not here in the United States. I hope not, too. But I would just simply point out that certainly there are real problems with the drought in China as far as their wheat crop is concerned. Their crop is going to be down at least 30%. They're not going to be exporting it. Australia is having real problems all throughout Africa. Why, of course, they have a wheat blight and it's spreading into parts of Asia. And here in the United States, a lot of our farmers have switched from growing wheat to growing corn. Why? Because we're subsidizing corn so we can make ethanol so we don't have to tap the massive quantities of oil we have here that they're concealing from the American people. And 4 out of every 10 ears of corn in the United States goes into subsidized ethanol, which of course burns up and destroys your car engine and destroys the hoses and creates all sorts of problems and more pollution than regular gasoline. But that doesn't really matter. What we've done is created an artificial situation where we have producing a product that has to be subsidized. There's no way you could possibly convert corn into ethanol and use it as a fuel for gasoline without massive government subsidies so that we will not have the wheat when the shortage comes. And people say, how could anything be that convoluted? Why, that's, couldn't be true. Well, let's wait and see how things play out this year. Let's see how things play out this year. This is going to be a pivotal year for America, but go right ahead.
Yeah, it's a pivotal year for the United States as it's presently constituted, I believe, and for the rest of the world, because the United States, of course, remains the most consequential nation, in the sense that the government ruling us is the most powerful of the many criminal syndicates called governments that afflict this planet. I think that one of the things that we're going to see here in the United States is a sudden realization on the part of many people, a growing realization, that we live under a system here in this country that differs from the system in Egypt under Mubarak only in matters of degree rather than in matters of kind. And that shouldn't surprise us, of course, because Mubarak was a wholly owned subsidiary of the government of the United States.
Well, before we go on, I agree with everything you say, but there's something even more important right now, and that is I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, read your articles, and find your PayPal button.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My blog is called Pro Libertate, ProLiberTate, and you can go to a web search engine such as Google or Bing or something of that sort, and type in Pro Libertate and my last name, Grigg, G-R-I-G-G, and my blog will probably be the first result. As a matter of fact, if you type in either Grigg or Pro Libertate, the blog's going to be one of the first key returns, but put the two of them together and you'll find that right at the top of the list. Or go to freedominourtime.blogspot.com. And I've been trying to update this blog with a new essay every couple of days this past week, particularly with respect to the unfolding events in Egypt, which I think, once again, are of epoch-shattering significance, quite frankly, in terms of being a forerunner, a harbinger, an augury, a portent of really interesting times to come. And my blog essays usually run between 1,200 and 2,000 words, and it's because I try to produce works of investigative opinion commentary. I have to elaborate a little bit more on my thoughts than a lot of bloggers do. It reflects my background with the New American and other enterprises where I've been involved in investigative journalism. You mentioned at the bottom of every essay I do have a PayPal button. I have an account with PayPal. For those who have the means to contribute and are interested in doing so, the button is at the bottom of every essay, and this is how I'm supporting myself and my family, is in this trust exercise that is blogging basically in the fashion of a street musician with a can or a tip jar next to him playing for tips. And many of your listeners, Dr. Stan, have been very generous to me and my family, and we've been able to sustain ourselves in pretty scary economic times on the basis of what people are willing to donate. That's something for which I'm very grateful, and I really appreciate, Dr. Stan, the fact that that you give me this opportunity every week to talk with you about what's going on in the world and have a chance to talk to your audience, for whom I have great respect and no small amount of gratitude.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you are getting the support because, in my estimation, William is one of the finest minds out there. The material he puts out is great. He's picked up by some of the leading websites, and his material is well researched and well accurate. And if he says it, you can pay your money and be sure it's right. Go ahead.
I really appreciate that, Dr. Stan. When talking about the system in Egypt that existed here, I think it's important to point out that, once again, not only has the National Democratic Party and the military junta that was sort of the power behind the party being a facade, they've managed to eliminate all the significant sources of potential opposition to the central government. They've also centralized power very tidily. So you have this huge apparatus, primarily of internal repression, because they've never been a particularly fearsome military presence on the foreign stage. They've always been much better at internal repression and regimentation. And that's the way that the system is supposed to work. If you take a look at the larger global architecture that has been the aspiration of this group you refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness now for over 200 years, go all the way back to St. Pierre's plan for perpetual peace back in the early, mid-1700s, and the updated version of that was the Freedom from War schematic that was put out by the United States and the Soviet Union in 1961. The model they have is of a world that is under a global central locus of control. In the case of St. Pierre, he's talking about Europe, but now through the United Nations, they're talking about doing this globally. And you would have an arrangement in which every national government, every kingdom back in the 18th century, or national government today, would have a unified and militarized internal security apparatus that would be basically the role played by the military and the police and every one of these constituent members of a single global political community. And so Egypt already has that type of a model. There's no distinction to be drawn between the military and the police force. And when Sadat was assassinated in the fall of 1981, he was assassinated by members of the military who were part of the Islamic group, the Islamic, I think it was called a military Islamic group, and they were basically the armed wing of what we now call the Muslim Brotherhood, which is to say, he had a fellow who was an asset of the United States Intelligence Service who was killed by another asset of the United States Intelligence Service back in 1981, but he was replaced by Mr. Mubarak, who, like the man who's replacing him, Omar Suleiman, was cultivated as an asset by the United States. But there's another interesting aspect of the story that not many people have talked about, and that is the fact that both Mubarak and Omar Suleiman were also trained by the Soviet Union. Both of them went to the Frunze Military Academy in, I believe it's in Moscow, before they had anything to do with Western intelligence. They were both trained by the Soviet Union. As a matter of fact, Suleiman was one of the people who were trained in the hands-on art of torture by the KGB, the Soviet advisors who were kicked out by Sadat in the early 1970s, before his break with the Soviet Union. The other thing I find interesting about Hosni Mubarak is that he's always been very good friends with the Kim dynasty in North Korea. Back in the early 1970s, before the war with Israel in 1973, the Egyptian Air Force was given training by North Korean pilots. They were flying MiGs of the same make and model and vintage that the North Koreans had. So the North Koreans sent military advisors to train the Egyptian Air Force, which had been reduced to rubble. They'd been basically blown up to shrapnel within minutes in the 1967 war against Israel. And they did a little bit better in the 1973 war, in large measure because they were given better tactical advice by the North Koreans and by the Soviets. And the North Koreans also provided Egypt with missiles, surface-to-air missiles, that were used in the war in 1973, and they were given the know-how to manufacture their own. And since that time, in spite of the fact that Mubarak has been on the payroll of the United States, and North Korea is one of the few communist regimes with which Washington has had, at least on a superficial level, a posture of unremitting hostility, Mubarak was always very close to North Korea. The other thing I find really interesting about what's happened in Egypt over the last couple of weeks is that I believe it was either on the 1st of February or maybe the 31st of January, the Socialist International sent a communique to the head of the National Democratic Party in Egypt, which of course was Hosni Mubarak, saying that they were going to expel that party from the Socialist International. Since it was founded by Gamal Nasser back in the 1950s as the Arab Socialist Union, the National Democratic Party, the ruling party in Egypt, has been a member of the Socialist International, which was originally the Socialist Working Men's Association founded by Karl Marx. And so a lot of the commentary I've seen here about how the opposition to Mubarak has been this alliance of radical Muslims and left-wing communists. Some of that, of course, is true because there is that element behind the scenes here, these peripheral, insignificant, minuscule, mimeograph-using grouplets have been involved in this. But if you take a look at the nature of the regime they're replacing, it's just a case of, once again, meet the new boss, same as the old boss type of thing. With respect to the other element of what happened in Egypt, but one thing I really find interesting about the way that the National Democratic Party and the Egyptian elite have manipulated and controlled the economy is that starting in the mid-1970s, I believe it was 1974, under Sadat, the National Democratic Party actually was founded in the mid-1970s. The Arab Socialist Union was dissolved, but they created three parties. The National Democratic Party is the centrist party, and then a right-wing and a left-wing companion party to the National Democratic Party, and they were all controlled by the same people. And this was done, of course, in order to provide a dialectical mechanism for controlling the opposition. The same thing that happened in the former Soviet Union beginning in 1991, late 1991, July, August of that year, before the Communist Party of the Soviet Union legislated an end to its own overt monopoly on the political system. And allowed other parties to contend in elections. The Communist Party of the Soviet Union basically divvied up its cadres among, I think, two dozen different parties that were all part of the same bloc, the same governing bloc, so that you could vote for any one of these parties, but you'd still be voting for people who were part of the party apparatus, the nomenklatura, the people who were veterans of the Komsomol, longtime Communist Party members, people who were given preferential and established position as the people who basically had received the deed to everything of value in the Soviet or Russian economy. That's how you ended up with Gazprom and some of the other large state-run, nominally private, but actually public-private partnership-type economic interests in the former Soviet Union. They're all run by the same folks. The Wall Street Journal used the expression red managers to refer to the people who run these nominally private but still government-sponsored and subsidized and U.S.-subsidized economic interests in the former Soviet Union. Well, Egypt did the same thing. They did the same thing in the 1970s and 1980s, and it created a cast of invincibly politically secure and unfathomably wealthy people, the Mubarak family. It wasn't a dynasty. I mean, his son, who's my age, Hosni Mubarak's son, actually got out of the country a few weeks ago. They spirited him out of the country before any of this stuff went down, which I think is interesting. There's a possibility he might end up being a player in a future scenario if they want to restore the dynasty, like the Bourbons in post-Napoleonic France. That's a possibility because he's still a relatively young man. He's got several decades of useful life as a stooge.
Maybe like the Bushes in American
exactly.
political life, you know.
Sure.
From your grandfather, Senator Bush, to President Bush, to President Bush again. We have dynasties here, but the American people never even stop and think about it.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. There was really a possibility back in 2008. This is a brief, but I think appropriate digression. There's a possibility that we might have gone from a Bush to a Clinton to a Bush to a Clinton in the course of four consecutive elections, and it's not beyond the realm of possibility that we'll end up with either another Bush or another Clinton.
Well, don't forget Jeb, you know, is certainly a very
sure.
viable candidate next
exactly.
time, right? And, people say, well, I don't understand. Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you think we have a real political system? Professor Quigley put it best. He was Bill Clinton's mentor in his book, Tragedy and Hope. You know, he said, you know, you've got to have two political parties just about the same so that the people can go to the polls every 4 years and throw the scoundrels out, but nothing changes. And that's pages 1247 and 1248 of Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And there is very little hope because he put the hope in this elite. They were going to get things
yeah.
straightened out. He was an elitist. He thought this was wonderful. We needed an elite to rule us, and we have an elite that rules us. And look at the mess we are in. Look at the mess the world is in. Because, of course, Professor Quigley didn't understand the spiritual forces energizing our dynasties here in America.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the same mechanism he's talking about, the same process he's talking about, applies in the third world far-flung colonies of the empire. The difference is that they have coups every once in a while to replace people who've grown too complacent or too corrupt, too visibly and obviously corrupt. They have to be removed. And that's why a couple of years ago you have the Carnegie people talking about exactly what we see right now being consummated in Egypt. They had to have a military interregnum in order to replace Mubarak, because there was no established means of succession. He did not appoint a vice president. He had no clear successor. How are you going to take care of this? Well, you can't let a power vacuum develop. Before he's a completely spent quantity, you have to control the situation by bringing about a military coup. How do you bring about a military coup? Well, you cultivate Suleiman as a successor. Then you create a situation where the people in the streets are going to be driven to embrace the idea of military rule as an alternative to the rule of this hideously corrupt dictator and the depredations of his police force. That's exactly what happened over the last couple of weeks. That if you understand the fact that this is something that was discussed in those circles 2 years ago, then you'd understand that what we see is exactly what that handful of protesters on Liberation Square said. It's a play. You know, the play is the thing.
And if you listen to our programs regularly, remember that Lindsay Williams, just about 3.5 months ago, he was told there's going to be a major conflict in the Middle East in between 4 and 6 months. And, of course, we were thinking it was a war with Iran. I asked Lindsay, is this going to be a war with Iran? And I was told by Mr. Fromm, who'd been the president of ARCO, one of the ruling elite, no, Lindsay, it's going to be a conflict in the Middle East. Why do you think there might be a conflict in the Middle East in this next month or two? We'll be back in a moment. William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, and these are such exciting times, you know. To know the Lord, to have a voice for you to have.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dry Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Friday program. Yes, it is Friday, February 11, 2010. We are live at the Power Hour. We're so glad that you're joining us today. You are appreciated. I'll tell you what, if no matter where else you are and who else you have around you, you're appreciated at the Power Hour, because each person that gets educated in the ways of the world and then the ways of reality, well, we appreciate you, because it's just one more team member for us to amass to say not no, but heck no. And that's what our goal is here at the Power Hour, is to back away from the system.
lots of people out there thinking that, oh, I'm only one. No, 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 no. And remember, again, coming up the 15th of this month, every 15th is, well, it's called Don't Buy, Don't Comply and Ask Why. I call it Heck No Day. Not going to buy from the bad guys. We're going to buy from the good guys. Anyway, in the news today, major turnaround in what happened in Egypt. All ready for Mubarak to take the stand and say, I'm out of here, and it didn't happen. He did not resign. We'll talk about the reason why he did not resign, and was he ever planning to resign, or is this all media hype? It's unfortunate because we don't have any way of knowing what's really taking place there. It's unfortunate that we don't have any way of distilling out the truth.